Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello, and welcome to Indie Streak. My name is Rachel Galvin, and as you know, I interview film industry professionals on this show. And if you've missed any of my shows, you can go back and scroll down and listen to my archives. Well, today I'm interviewing Isaac James, actor and director of Turbine, and I think I have him on the line here. Let me check.
Yes.
Isaac, are you there? Hey.
Yeah, I'm here, Rachel. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good.
Well, you know what? I'm going to dive right in and start asking you some questions. Are you ready?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Okay. Well, you showed your movie Turbine at the Fort Lauderdale International Film Festival last year, and you directed and wrote and acted in the film. Why don't you tell us a little bit about it for those that haven't seen it? First, let's just start with a synopsis about it.
Turbine is a film about a couple who moved from New York City in hopes of getting involved with wind energy. And they move from New York to Missouri, and they actually move out to Rockport, Missouri, which is actually a town that is completely powered by wind energy, which is a true fact. And they go out there, and they wind up getting involved with a couple out there, a kind of a wealthy farming couple, and their relationship falls apart from there. That's pretty much the log line of the film Turbine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What inspired you to write this?
Well, you know, I think for us, Turbine was a very different kind of movie for us. As a writer, I've always been kind of interested in different forms of energy, because I really feel like that's one of the things that can, help our country sort of become, self-sufficient again. I mean, you see these mm-hmm. wind turbines popping up all over the country. It's, it's kind of intriguing to think that we wouldn't have to rely on, foreign sources for our energy. So that was always something that I was kind of interested in. But more than that, sort of how that affects people who actually live and work in that industry. So I think that was sort of a jumping off point. And then the story was really a story that could have been told anywhere. We actually had a couple of connections in Missouri as well. Our executive producer, Michael Berg, was from that part of the country. So we had a lot of support out there. Mm-hmm. It's like you've got a story, and then you kind of find an interesting place to sort of set it. Again, Turbine is very different than our last film, Hungry Years, which was a comedy. We sort of went about producing it and working on it in a very very different way.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, no, I'm fine. Yeah.
I was going to talk about this later, but we might as well talk about it now. You were talking about Hungry Years and how it was such a different film from this film.
Mm-hmm.
But they both had a little bit of controversy in them. How did you deal with that in both films?
Well, yeah. I mean, I guess I would say probably Hungry Years more so than Turbine.
Mm-hmm.
I guess with in terms of Turbine being controversial, I guess there was a bit of controversy behind it, I suppose, but certainly not as much as Turbine, as Hungry Years.
Hungry
Years.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I really don't know that the Turbine was that controversial in terms of its, unless maybe I missed a couple of reviews. I know there were some people out in Missouri who were a little bit. I was reading some message boards out there, and they were sort of, the whole idea of this farmer relationship and the really
mm-hmm.
they kind of got a little bit I didn't really think that it was incredibly controversial. It's kind of straightforward, but maybe there are some elements that are
I think more just the sex scenes were a little controversial for some audiences.
Right.
Of the audiences were a little bit taken aback by some of the sex scenes, but
sure.
You're definitely right that the Hungry Years film had a lot more controversy based on the topics that were involved, the autism and handicapped and all of that things going on. And how did you deal with that as a director? If did people come up to you and say things, and how did you negotiate that?
Well, yeah. I think with Hungry Years, we tackled a lot of different issues. You know, it's a script that's, you know, remains very, very close to my heart. Probably one of, you know, my favorite pieces to date. But I guess it's it's difficult to try to, especially when you're doing something satirical. You know, you really don't want people to take it the wrong way. I think that's the hardest thing about it. You know, what was controversial about Hungry Years actually, you know, I think in some ways wound up to be a bit of a selling point sometimes for the for the film. But again, you have to be. I think it's all in how you present something. And sometimes when you deal with controversial issues, people get angry, and that same response can generate a little bit of buzz about a film. But we really didn't. We tried to be. We certainly weren't, you know, going at it to make a movie that was specifically controversial. We just kind of wanted to tackle some offbeat subject matter with it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always difficult when you get an audience response. Sometimes you play it for an audience and they totally get where you're coming from and sometimes you play it and they just they don't like it at all. I mean, I guess it's like something like South Park. You know, some people watch South Park and get it, and then some people watch it and don't. I think, you know, Turbine is a lot more of a straight-ahead kind of movie than Hungry Years is. It's not at all satirical. It's very, very different. And, of course, we did have, you know, it's not necessarily a family, you know, family film. But, but at the same time, you know, more and more indies that I see certainly have lots and lots of, you know, kind of extreme sexual content seems to be a bit of a trend nowadays. So, you know, we tried to really kind of ride that line and not get too crazy with it. But we did think it was kind of an important part of the storyline. And then again, a movie like Hungry Years had absolutely no sexual content at all. So, yeah, just totally, they're two totally different pieces.
What did you learn from Hungry Years that maybe changed the way you directed Turbine? Another two different films, like your approach.
Well, I think that, you know, with Hungry Years, we had a movie that covered so much. I mean, we had so many characters, and we covered a lot of ground. And, you know, we did it on an extremely, extremely low budget. So when you're working on these small budgets, you're trying to cover lots of characters, you have lots of actors involved, you can really kind of spread yourself thin. So what we wanted to do on Turbine was sort of take a different approach and sort of concentrate on fewer characters and sort of focus more on, more on their stories so that people wouldn't necessarily get as lost. It was just, it was sort of a different approach, and that we were just trying to pare things down a little bit with Turbine. Hungry Years is very grand for the budget we had.
Yeah, definitely. Turbine is more of a character study, and it was really interesting the way that the characters interacted, and I wondered how you approached working as an actor and a director in here and how you got the chemistry between the characters.
Right, well, that was pretty difficult. It was very challenging, actually, on Turbine, and my sister Eva co-directed Turbine with me. We worked together, so fortunately for scenes that I was in, I had her there to be able to sort of, you know, direct the scene, and I could kind of take my directing hat off for a moment and then be just part of the scene, because it's very difficult to direct, you know, to be working with an actor and then give them direction at the same time. It's virtually impossible. So fortunately, we share a lot of the same sort of ideas about good acting and whatnot, and what we're looking for out of the story. So, it was invaluable to have her there on the set to be able to do that. And also, it's just very difficult to figure out whether you gave a good performance, you know, in the moment, because you didn't see it on the screen. So basically, we would do a few takes, and I would take direction from Eva, and then I would go back and maybe take a look at three or four takes and see if they worked, you know, once we felt that we'd gotten it. And, once I gave it the thumbs up, we sort of moved on. Or if I felt like it needed another pass, we would go back and sort of do it that way. But it's very, very, very delicate. And I don't know if next time around I will be in front of the camera, just because it's so difficult.
Mm-hmm. How did you prepare for those intimacy scenes with Whitney? How did you create that chemistry and prepare for something like that?
Well, you know, it's always difficult, and with Turbine, we actually had a larger crew than we'd ever had for any of our previous films. So there we were with a pretty large, I mean, a crew of like maybe 10 people, and for us that was pretty mm-hmm. extreme, because we've always been with smaller crews of maybe 4 or 5, whatever. So we had to we had to close off the set, of course. So, you know, we kept it really down to to the cameraman, and for most of it we didn't even have a sound man present. We sort of put in room mics to get the uh-huh. sound that way. So there we sort of cut that down a lot. I know a lot of it looks sort of quote-unquote sexy and salacious, but it really is, it's uncomfortable to a certain extent, because you have to be in there and doing these takes over and over again. And not to say that, you know, I minded doing that, but it's not at all as sexy as it winds up appearing on screen. That's all the magic of just camera work and sound effects and everything. You find yourself just sort of doing these things over and over again. So it's not necessarily steamy. It's more, it can be a little bit uncomfortable at times, especially when you have, you know, when you're half naked and then you have a camera there and your sister, yeah. But for most of that, you know, she just sort of left. She sort of left the room, so she really couldn't deal with any of that. Fortunately, I don't think I really ever had anything other than my shirt off, so it wasn't, you know, it may mm-hmm. appear that I had more off, actually, but I actually didn't. So, again, it's the beauty of making movies, you know. I watch the stuff and I'm like, oh, my God, I can't even believe that, because it's such a totally different experience. In between takes, everybody's kind of sitting around in a robe just waiting to get, you know, get in for that one close-up or whatever. So it's it's very, very interesting process. And then also, you know, not eating, you know, bagels or donuts, you know, like 2 days before to make sure that, you know, it's very difficult acting in a film and directing it as well and producing it, because I'm a very hands-on mm-hmm. kind of director producer. I shoot myself. I mean, not on Hungry Years or Turbine, but, you know, I have in the past. So I really have a good, you know, understanding of technical and whatnot, and I like to get in there. And oftentimes when you're working on a production, it's sort of it's two different things, you know. Acting is, you know, you kind of have to stay off, you know, kind of in your own little space and prepare, think about your character, you know, work with the other actors, develop relationships. And production mm-hmm. is completely different. So so it does wind up being very, 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 very challenging when you have to do both, and especially in a lead role.
Right. And you created a lot of surrealism in the mood of the film. How did you work with the cinematographer to create that?
Well, you know, I think, you know, on this film we really got lucky in that. I think one of the things that I forgot to mention is when we actually got out to Rockport and took a look around, it's just so filmic, and you've just got this beautiful mm-hmm. vast terrain. And we shot on a 7D DSLR mm-hmm. camera, and those cameras really lend themselves to sort of static shots with sort of minimal movement. And you know, really, you go out there and you put down your camera, and obviously, you know, we had a very talented DP, and I'm very heavily involved in all the framing of all the shots. And so there was a lot of technical that went into it, but we were blessed in that we really had just a great environment to work with. So many beautiful shots out there, so many beautiful colors, so many interesting sounds to record. And it was pretty, after you're used to working in New York City, where every time you set up for a take, you've got like a car honking or like somebody screaming outside, out there it's beautiful, quiet, really, really nice. We did have some issues in terms of weather, though, because, you know, we got out there and we wanted these big, beautiful, you know, sunny days, and we got out there in May, and we figured it was going to be nice weather. But honestly, the first, I would say, 2 weeks of the shoot, we had straight rain and cold weather in the 40s. Yeah, and
wow.
So that was really, really challenging, and so that put us on a really kind of difficult schedule. But, you know, we wanted the movie to be sort of surreal, sort of eerie, sort of isolated, mm-hmm. and that's basically what that place is. I mean, it's very, 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 very quiet, very beautiful, very vast, and so it wasn't too hard to create that visually.
And well, one of the best parts about the movie, I think, is how you created symbolism throughout the film by just little things that you added, like the wilted flowers or the wilted plants, talking about infertility, and the cuckolding sequence with the elk horns. How conscious were you to create that type of symbolism throughout the movie?
Well,
it's coming from me.
Well, I know all those things were actually, you know, you're very perceptive to have picked them up. Lots of people miss them, you know, upon watching the film. But, you know, they were all things that were actually written into the script. You know, when I had written the story, I had initially just sort of done an outline for a story that could have kind of happened any place, you know, in a way. But after I visited all of those, you know, after I actually visited the town of Rockport and everything, all of a sudden all this symbolism started hitting me. And mm-hmm. I remember I was out there, and I guess we had passed like some kind of a deer carcass, you know, where he's kind of looking over the town and everything. And I was like, wow, you know, I've got this character, Nick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he feels emasculated. Wouldn't it be interesting to use these horns in some kind of a capacity? And then it all sort of, it came together from there. So I think a lot of the symbolism actually just came from the environment itself. And then, of course, they were mm-hmm. written into, you know, kind of, I incorporated them into the script before we got out there. And so we had to search for all of those symbols. And, for instance, we did happen to see a deer carcass one day, which we had to stop and sort of and grab, which is kind of gross, to
yeah.
say the least. And, you know, it's funny because there are, like, horns everywhere. Everywhere you go, somebody's got a deer head on their wall. So mm-hmm. that was sort of a deer or an elk. That's sort of interesting. Yeah, but it all, for the most part, was written into the script.
Yeah, I think a lot of people might miss something like that, because especially that elk sequence was so odd. It kind of threw you off. And then, you know, I had to think about it, like, wait a minute, this is something else altogether. And it is such an intellectual element that I think some people might miss that, but I think that's what makes a great director, is to throw that type of thing in there. So I think it was well done.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. And it's so nice. It's so nice when somebody actually picks up on some of the, you know, the symbolism that you put in there. You know, we did, again, you know, it's this one person, Nick, and he's just so small against, you know, all of these elements. These, you know, elements is, you know, as great as the wind and nature and whatnot. So we really tried to, you know, to build that. We have a sequence with a dog in a cage on Darius's land, you know, which is sort of symbolic mm-hmm. of what Nick might become. So it was funny because we found all of these things sort of in this, you know, in this environment, which was, it was really perfect. It really was perfect and visually.
You created Nick was such a vulnerable character, and he became more and more vulnerable as it went on. How did you create that kind of vulnerability as an actor?
Well, I don't know. I think, you know, for me, I always start in a place of, you know, when I approach a character, I always try to put myself in that position and kind of work from there. And I think, you know, in the past when I've had to play different characters, I've always just sort of used elements of myself. In those characters, and you know, I guess you know Nick would be a very different character than somebody like Neil in Hungry Years, but probably even more of a vulnerable character. I guess it just comes down to sort of, you know, digging in yourself and sort of going back to, you know, just finding that place in yourself and sort of putting yourself in that situation. And, you know, working from there. And also working with your, you know, working with your fellow actors and, you know, I you know, with between, you know, Michael Berg and Anne Marie and Whitney, I had a really, you know, really strong people to work off of. And as an actor, I generally like to, you know, feed off of sort of Meisner-esque sort of ways my other actors. So, you know, the better the chemistry is, you know, the better I generally do. So yeah, that was a little bit of that, just sort of going back and drawing on your own experiences when, you know, when you felt sort of vulnerable or had had issues. So I guess that's kind of my approach for Nick.
And you had some just great cast members, and some of them you've worked with before on Hungry Years. How do you go about finding your cast?
We did some pretty, I mean, for the other features we've done some pretty extensive casting sessions in New York City. And I think Hungry Years was probably the most extensive casting session. And again, you know, we're very low budget, so we didn't have the luxury of being able to hire a casting director and whatnot. And, you know, when you're working on something low budget, it's very difficult to, you know, get actors who are, you know, sort of recognized to take part. So we just went about by putting ads in Backstage and Variety, not Variety, but Backstage and just all the different casting sources in New York, and just would hold these massive open calls. And it would be amazing who would just, like, walk in the door. I mean, for Hungry Years, we actually had Michael E. Knight come in for an audition from All My Children. And it was insane because we just, you know, we totally weren't expecting it. But, we found some really terrific talent. But Hungry Years, we really had to search far and wide. And I believe, actually, with Michael Berg, who we worked with on Hungry Years, He came in for the role, and he was absolutely perfect. He was absolutely what I wanted for Dale. He just had that had that thing, you know. And he came in. He was super, super into the project. Gave a great audition. He was really gave 100%. And then, you know, we had such a terrific experience, working on the film. And then when the Fort Lauderdale rolled around, the first time we attended for Hungry Years, I guess that was in 2009.
Yeah.
He came along, you know, and I think that's sort of where, I had talked a little bit about a story that I was, had been developing, and then he had talked about maybe being interested in, you know, working on a film in a sort of a producer's capacity. And I think that's sort of where all that kind of came about.
And how can people see your movies? Are they out available yet for Turbine and Hungry Years?
Yes. Turbine and Hungry Years are available on iTunes currently. They're also available on Amazon streaming. Also, they will be available on Netflix starting in April. It's been kind of a long process getting it on there, but both titles will be available in April on Netflix. So that's another really good venue for people to watch on Netflix streaming. So,
do you have a personal website that you want to give everybody?
The website is www.lastditchpictures.com.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We have a few minutes left, and I just wanted to see what you're doing next.
We're just sort of, I've been doing a bit of commercial work, kind of paying the bills. But we do have a project, on the horizon, hopefully, to start shooting soon. But we haven't really committed to anything yet because we're not sure. We still have to work on funding and all that fun stuff. But, I would hope that for 2012, 2013, we would have another feature out there in the world. If all goes according to plan.
Yeah.
You know,
there's always so many things that go on. Yeah.
Oh yeah, so many different variables. But I think we have a lot of good experience under our belt from the last films, and you know, I think every couple of years you kind of get the itch to do another picture, and I think we're definitely due for something else.
Great. Well, thanks for being on the show today. We're already running out of time, but thanks for being on the show. And we look forward to I've already seen the films, but for those that haven't seen them, they can go check them out on your website or any of the places that you listed before, and maybe I can bring you back on here at some point.
Yeah, most definitely. You know, hopefully when we've got the next one in the, you know, in the works, you know, love to come back and chat with you. And it's such a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on and talking to me.
All right. Thanks, Isaac.
Okay. All right. All right.
All right.
Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, so that was our chat with Isaac James. And if you missed any of the websites that he gave, you can go back and listen to the show anytime you want, and you can listen to those different ways that you can watch the films, both Turbine and Hungry Years. We didn't talk too much about the content of Hungry Years, but both Hungry Years and Turbine are great films. They're very different. Some people that may not have liked Hungry Years as much like Turbine better. You know, everything is up to taste, you know, what your taste is and what you like. But if you really dig deep within the films, you're going to find some gold in there. And that's the thing with his films, that it is a lot of intellectual symbolism in there. And if you are not aware of that, then the surface may not be as pretty as what's underneath. So if you do watch the films, really, they're films that you're going to think about and spend a lot of time thinking about what he intended for the characters and for the role. And with Turbine, it was a great character study, like I said, a great film. Once I really started thinking about it, I liked it more and more the more I thought of it, which I always love films like that, that you can kind of sink your teeth into, and the more you think about it, the more you like it. So that was our chat with Isaac, and once again, if you missed any part of this show or if you missed any of the other shows that I've done, you can go back and you can listen to the archives. Just scroll down, and I've interviewed everybody from Dean Lyon, who worked on Lord of the Rings, to Lloyd Kaufman, the B-movie king, and so on and so forth. So if you missed any of those, there's little tidbits of wisdom, hopefully, for filmmakers and also actors out there, because a lot of the people that I've talked to, like Isaac, have given some information that's great for actors as well, because a lot of people are doing both directing and acting. And I've also done a review of Turbine on my website, which is Independent Streak, which is listed as www.independentstreak.com. And if you go to, I think it's under reviews, you can see my review on Turbine. Actually, I think it's under blogs, if you go to blogs. So you look around, because there's a lot of great stuff on my website, different reviews for different productions that I've talked about. There are a lot of filmmakers that are members on there that you can go in and you can chat with if you want to get in contact with them. So it's a great way to network with them. Also, we have some videos and things. I will be updating the site. I haven't updated it recently, I have to say, because I have been concentrating on this show. Also, remember, I have an additional show called Basics of the Biz. I am going to be probably stopping that show for a little while because I'm going to be promoting the content I've already done. Basics of the Biz is about my personal experiences as an actor, and that show has been on Thursdays at 1 o'clock in the morning. And I talk about everything from headshots and resumes to acting classes, marketing your look, so on and so forth. And that's based on my book by the same name, Basics of the Biz. So you can always go back and listen to the archives for that. Once again, that's on blogtalkradio.com/basicsofthebiz. And I will be back next week, same time, Sunday at 1 p.m. Today was 1:30, but normally it's at 1 p.m. And I will be interviewing someone else next week. So make sure you return here to Indie Streak for next week's show. And I don't know who I'm going to be interviewing yet, so it'll be a surprise. And you can check out the site and see who I'm interviewing. So same bat time, same bat channel. I thank you for tuning in today, and I will talk to you then. All right. Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.